hearing, and we're going to try to get out of here as close to 5 o'clock as we can. We're probably not going to make that, but in order to try to give everybody a chance, I'm going to have to limit testimony to 3 minutes, so we get kind of like a highlight film, which will be more fun anyway. And I want to say real quickly, as before we go back into this, when you're looking at a bill and you read it, because I know some people out there are trying to read this bill, when you read a bill, the bold language is new language. The language that is italicized, it looks kind of funny and skinny, and is inside the parentheses or the parentheticals, the brackets. That is language being taken out, and the language that isn't bold or italicized is the language that's already in existing law. So for everybody that's trying to read the bill, I hope that's helpful to you. We're going to limit all the testimony to 3 minutes, and I've got both an egg timer and a little sand glass for that purpose. So this will give you an idea when time's running out. The first person I want to call is Lewis Tully.
Can I say one thing, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Miller.
I know for some that probably strikes you as not particularly fair, traveling maybe some far distance and having only 3 minutes to speak. I would tell you that each of us on the committee would appreciate if you have some follow-up testimony that you would want to write, and that's maybe not the desired thing for you, but that is helpful to all of us. Phone calls from you or your friends that simply go on that legislative line that say you support this bill or you don't like it. All of us read those messages, we truly do, and we appreciate any input you personally have or can generate. So don't feel that you're omitted from the process and the chairman just has a difficult time in trying to limit testimony. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll shut up so they can continue.
Thank you, Representative Miller. Mr. Tully.
Hello, members of the committee. My name is Lewis Tully. I'm the Western Director for Handgun Control Incorporated, a national citizens organization working to keep handguns out of the wrong hands. We have more than 5,000 supporters in Oregon. On behalf of Sarah
Can
Brady, the chair of our organization,
yes,
don't count this against his time, but if you do have a written statement, most of us can read faster than you can speak.
I have already cut significantly
good.
From it.
Good,
yes, sir. On behalf of Sarah Brady, I would like to congratulate Speaker Vera Katz for successfully negotiating an unprecedented agreement between law enforcement and gun enthusiast groups to strengthen Oregon's gun laws on the purchase of firearms. From a national perspective, this bill is very significant because the Speaker and law enforcement got the National Rifle Association to accept legislation which includes a 15-day waiting period and a fingerprint check for handgun purchases. We find considerable merit in this bill. I'm sure that you will agree that there is always room for some improvement in any legislation, and in that spirit, we would like to offer a few brief suggestions. We are concerned that the permit may be overly broad. As you know, Oregon law currently allows any law-abiding citizen to carry a gun without any permit, as long as it is not totally concealed. For example, handguns may be carried in belt holsters. At the request of the NRA, this bill changes Oregon law to allow almost any person who is neither a felon nor mentally unstable to also obtain a permit to carry loaded concealed weapons almost anywhere. We would suggest that concealed weapons ought to be barred from some places. HB 3740 should forbid permit holders to carry in barrooms, stadiums, and the like. HB 3470 should not enlarge the number of people who will be allowed to carry loaded guns into public buildings, such as schools, courthouses, and the state capitol itself, as it currently does. In many states, sheriffs are given discretionary authority to place limits on when and where a permit is valid. Secondly, we would like to encourage you to strengthen the background check. The law enforcement agency is directed to determine whether the purchaser may lawfully possess a gun under state law, but that agency could and should ensure that the purchaser is not disqualified under state or federal law. We are also concerned that this bill would actually rescind a current state law which forbids giving guns to any child under the age of 14. We do not believe Oregon should begin arming its preteens. Finally, it is well known that the effort to improve Oregon's gun purchase laws began when it was learned that Patrick Purdy bought his infamous AK-47 at a legitimate gun store in Oregon. While we understand that this bill applies only to handguns, we would encourage you to consider the problem of assault weapons. Other states, including Virginia and Maryland, have passed pre-purchase background checks on assault weapons. Again, we applaud your historic efforts. We thank Speaker Katz for her leadership. We hope that you will carefully consider our suggestions. Handgun Control Incorporated would be pleased to work with you, with law enforcement, and with the National Rifle Association and other groups to strengthen HB 3470 and help to make Oregon safer for all its citizens. Thank you for giving us this opportunity.
Thank you. Any questions of the committee? All right. Thank you very much. Is your Bob Petrovsky?
Mr. Chairman and respected committee members, my name is Bob Petrovsky, and I'm here before you today as a representative of West Coast Arms Collectors Association, which represents 600-plus members residing within the state of Oregon. I'd like to go on record saying that I am one gun owner who is present today that does not want to be represented by the NRA, the Oregon State Rifle and Pistol Association, or the Citizens Committee to keep for the Right to Keep and Bear Arms. I'm here representing gun owners that I feel that are members of our association. After careful review of House Bill 3470 and recognizing the good intent of the sponsors, we find that we cannot endorse this prohibitive legislation. It is our belief that more effort should go into apprehending and incarcerating career criminals and those that repeatedly abuse our society and criminal justice system. Such legislation as House Bill 3470 only further restricts the law-abiding citizens of our state their right of acquiring and keeping legitimate firearms, while the criminal who so easily disregards the law now will not be deterred by the provisions of this legislation. As an example, I would like to pass among the committee a recent article appearing in the Sunday, April 9, 1989, Statesman Journal. I believe that such an article is indicative of what we're facing in our society today. The further restrictions on the acquisition, use of firearms will not help the criminal system today. For the sake of time, I shall not go into the specifics of the bill and what is wrong with it. I do plan on coming and testifying before the committee at the subsequent hearings when they plan on going through the bill in detail. But the bill is clearly a form of unnecessary gun control in our state. I urge you to talk with your constituents about their opinions on gun control and have their right to keep and bear arms infringed upon before you take any action. I thank you for your time, and I encourage you to oppose this legislation and turn your attention to the real issue, which is the war on crime. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions of the committee? There being none, thank you very much. The first I want to call is Mr. William Temple.
Thank you, Representative Calhoun. My name is William S. Temple. I'm a resident of Marion County, and I'm here more or less representing myself today. A couple of things come to mind. A gun is an inanimate object, unless it's going to be loaded by a person, aimed at something, and a trigger squeezed, is going to remain an inanimate object. We're trying to limit guns, and we're taking the wrong approach, I think, to resolving the crime issues that we've got. We need to make people a little more responsible for their own actions. We need to make people accountable for what they do, right or wrong. The gun isn't the issue here. We had a recent homicide in Monmouth where there was a knife involved. People are going to commit crimes against people no matter what happens. They're going to use an instrument, a baseball bat, a knife, any darn thing. The idea is to try to make people a little more accountable for their own actions, not necessarily limit or restrict guns. We have a lot of laws on the books currently. Let's use them. Let's strengthen them a little bit. It's very much like a sinking ship. You've got a hole in the boat, and you've got allocated manpower and resources. As the skipper of the boat, you're not going to immediately set out to make a new sail so you can make landfall faster. You're going to take those resources and manpower allocations that you have, and you're going to fix the hole. You're going to make sure that you stay afloat. I think what we should do is take the laws that we've currently got, let's strengthen them a little bit, put some teeth in them, and let's make these people accountable. you know, by limiting everything, it's not going to benefit any of us. The laws that we currently have can indeed do the job. I think some parts of HB 3470 are good. The keeping guns out of the hands of the mentally incompetent is a wonderful, wonderful end in itself. I think there are some inherent problems. I don't know which side of the fence I happen to stand on. I would like to see something responsibly done in order to keep guns and crimes and things of this nature from occurring, you know, crimes with guns or knives or whatever from occurring. I think the input from the people that are here and from the other folks that have spoken before you, if you could take some of those ideas and use them and blend them together, we can come up with something that's workable. You know, it's only you have, at least at this point, the ability to make a decision or to make a recommendation, and I'd like to see very much reason applied by each and every one of you. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Mannix.
Yes, sir.
Well, we've got the problem between prevention and cure, and that's the fine line that we always keep going, having to travel, because we're talking more prevention when we talk about trying to prevent someone who's mentally ill or a criminal from getting his hands on a handgun. Cure is after they've committed the crime, great. Now, by the way, I'm one of those proponents. You want to build prison cells, I'll build them. You want to staff them with guards, I'll do it. All the way down the line, put them away, no problem. The problem is that some people actually, they're not all sentenced to life in prison, and some people actually are released at some point. And unless we tattoo mentally ill on people's foreheads or a tattoo on their foreheads felon or misdemeanor within the past 4 years, we've got to have some way of letting the person be identified as someone who shouldn't be allowed to have access to these weapons. And sure, I can't necessarily get out to the swap meets and do it, but there's one way of helping control it. And, don't you see this as some attempt to try to identify people who aren't legitimately able to own firearms? This guy, I assume he's got some sort of conviction in his background, and unless we're going to tattoo it on his forehead, we've got to have a way of identifying him when he walks into the gun store.
It seems obvious to me that this particular individual, after 25 different arrests, you know, the cause and effect relationship that you speak of, there somewhere along the line is a perfectly good reason to detain him.
Okay, we put him away for 20 years. After he gets out 20 years from now, I still don't want him to buy a handgun from anybody,
oh,
but
I
can't control everybody.
I agree. There's a gentleman that will speak after me that has a what I consider to be a pretty fair idea regarding...
Cut off your arms?
Pardon me?
No.
No. No, regarding employing the resources that the state already has available through the Department of Motor Vehicles. I think it's a wonderful idea.
I'm looking forward to hearing.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I appreciate the fact that you realize that what we're dealing with here is a compromise. And I grew up in Southern Oregon. I've owned guns all my life, and I find a lot of sections of this very unsettling. However, there are some big chunks in here that some people, particularly in the Portland metropolitan area, where in two of the three counties that I think there are less permits than you can count on both of your hands in a whole county. There's some big little big things that have been stuffed in there that are very, very pro-gun and to help gun owners in the Portland metropolitan area. And I'm glad that I think that some of the witnesses, I think through the earlier testimony, are seeing that, people realize that there's a big gem in there for gun owners. Although there's some bad things too. So
well, there's some good and some bad, but we shouldn't consider throwing the baby out with the bathwater. We have a foundation, but it's by no means perfect. You know, there's benefits and there's obviously some drawbacks. Now, the other thing, and I'm sure that what you're going to hear this afternoon is that the hobbyist, which is the category that I fall into, the collector and hobbyist, I go to gun shows and I buy and sell guns, and I do it on my own behalf. I have got a fairly nice collection of guns that I've accumulated this way. I don't want HB 3470 to step on that, because I feel as though that I can improve my gun collection continuously, and I would like to continue to do that.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yes, Representative Mannix.
In regard to what you mentioned earlier on this license, am I gathering that you're thinking that perhaps if I can get show that I know a little bit about safety and provide the proper documentation. That the Oregon driver's permit, we could put firearms authorized on there or concealed weapon authorized.
That is what has been discussed. Now, I'll let Mr. Percival, who fostered the idea.
Positive rather than negative identification.
Absolutely.
No, you want that to say.
No, that's out of order. That's out of order.
We'll get a chance here.
Either way, just a letter code or something. You know, some way of identifying an individual that has already had a background check without, I'm an ex-police officer. I don't care to carry a concealed weapon, for crying out loud. Although I would like to walk into a store and on impulse, if I see something that looks like it might fit into a collection that I've got, I'd like to be able to buy it and take it home. I would like to have a background check pre-done without going through the concealed weapons permit routine. There's got to be some way that we can use the resources we already have.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is your Mr. Bob Bill still present? Mr. Bill, it's a pleasure to see you today.
Nice to see you.
If anybody has any information that they'd like to distribute to the committee, the best thing to do is to take it right over to the fine lady sitting over here typing away at that machine, and she'll distribute it to all of us. It makes it easy for everybody.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Bob Bell, and I'm a member of the Albany Rifle and Pistol Club, life member of the Oregon State Rifle and Pistol Association, life member of the NRA. Currently, I'm vice president of the Oregon State Rifle and Pistol Association. I'm speaking specifically here today on behalf of the Albany Rifle and Pistol Club. Our members have had a chance to look at this bill, and they authorized the executive committee to make a evaluation of it, and they endorsed me to endorse it for them. And our concerns are with the concealed carry permit. We have different counties within our club, and we have different ideas of how that permit should be applied. This would standardize that. And our gun club is on record as favoring this bill, as long as the NRA, the State Association, and the Citizens to Keep and Bear Arms favor it. If it should get amended to where they do no longer endorse it, we will pull our endorsement of it. But this is a club endorsement of our members, even though it just has my signature on it, because the president called me last night and told me to endorse it, so I did. Are there any questions?
Appreciate you coming in. Any questions to the committee?
One other point. I also am friends with our sheriff, and he says 5 days is not enough time to do a background check. He says that given the time that we all know you have computers and you can do something real fast with them, but if you have a long weekend and then his staff is on the weekends doing the work that they have to do on weekends, their office is open on Monday or Tuesday, depending on the length of the weekend. They have to do that during their regular business hours, so if somebody was to apply on a Friday, it could be Monday or Tuesday before the background check was ever started.
Did he happen to mention what time would be sufficient?
Well,
I suspect that if he said he's a little cramped at 5 days, 15 days must
he has like reservations on this bill like everybody else does on the concealed portion of it. Now I'm speaking not for him, just in my discussions with him, that he thinks other counties were the problem on the concealed permit, which we do know. And Linn County, I've had a concealed permit under 3 different sheriffs, so I don't consider our county has ever been a problem under it. But he says 5 days is not enough time under the current system that he has to use.
But he made no comment with respect to 15.
Well, I assume that 15 would be better for him. And
That's fair enough.
You know, but also our members are also appreciative of the concealed carry portion of it would allow a person to buy a gun, period, with the concealed carry. And also, I've talked to some gun dealers who would like to have that as a background check when they sell a gun, that they would know that this person, if he has a concealed carry permit, he has had a background check. And it makes it, no one wants to sell a gun to somebody that is not supposed to have one. And if I were to sell one, I'd be prudent enough to ask for some more background. I don't frequent gun shows that often, though, so I can't speak other than this one dealer told me he would like to have that as a way of checking people. Any other questions?
Thank you very much, Mr. Bill. Are the Dohertys still here? Are any of the Dohertys still here? Is your Mark Walster here?
Mr. Chairman, representatives, my name is Mark Walster. Simply put, I'm just a father from Silverton, Oregon. I make knives for a living. In the process of my business, on occasion I trade knives for firearms in various gun shows. I can see where there are some very good aspects to House Bill 3470. At the same time, starting March 18th, myself and a number of my friends decided that we'd pretty much had enough of us, the law-abiding citizens, answering for the problem of crime. We sat down and we wrote a little letter. Then we asked a few people to sign it. I've now got 700 signatures on this little letter of people asking for no more restrictions, no more bans, no more legislation affecting us.
I need to interrupt with a question.
Yes.
Representative Mannix.
How do I, not knowing someone else, document whether or not you are a law-abiding person other than by checking your background or having you present to me some verification, some sort of documentation that you're law-abiding? There could be 50 ex-cons in this room right now, and I wouldn't know it unless I happen to know them personally or unless, as I was kidding before, we tattooed it on people's foreheads. Do you have some proposal to make where we can verify? In other words, I'd like to be able to verify who is law-abiding. And sure, I'd like to be able to say all non-law-abiding citizens are in prison, but unfortunately we don't have the space for all of them. A lot of them are out on the streets, and maybe after they've been rehabilitated after 20 years, maybe they ought to be back out, but I still don't want them to have a gun. How do I identify those people?
Okay, as far as the identification of whether or not you are a law-abiding citizen, I personally have no problem with that because I have no problem passing that litmus test. But at the same time, I don't understand why, once again, I have to pay. For instance, the idea of possessing a concealed weapons permit and being able to go into G.I. Joe's and purchase a rifle or a handgun with no waiting period is neat. That's great. But I have to lay out $50 to get it. At the same time, I can pass every one of those points on that litmus test to find out if I am a law-abiding citizen. That sheriff can deny it for whatever reason. It says that if in his opinion I would be a danger to society, then I have to go through who knows what in a court hearing. I work for a living. I took off work to come here. I don't see why it should. I realize there's no way for you to tattoo criminals. That would be a violation of their rights. In the meantime, aren't you violating my rights to operate freely by saying that I have to go through all of this process to buy something which my father, my grandfather, my great-grandfather, and my great-great-grandfather didn't have to go through?
The one comment I can make in that regard is that as we go back in time and we look at our constitutional protections, we were dealing with a community where most people knew other people in the community, a society where the biggest cities may have only had 10,000 people. And it was easier for people to know, well, there's Joe Dotterly, who is really out of his mind, and we would never let him have this flintlock or any other kind of weapon because he's just crazy. Well, these days, it's not as easy. You've got a lot more people.
I realize how complicated the problem presented before you is. At the same time, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Do you own a firearm?
No, but I support everyone's right.
Okay, now the chairman mentioned that he does. Do you mind telling me exactly what firearms you own and where they're kept?
Well, I don't particularly want to do that.
See?
Neither do I. I realize the bill says that there's not to be any central list. It doesn't say there can't be 35 satellite lists.
That's a good point, and we're going to address that.
I might say that as for the fingerprinting, the bill says that the fingerprints aren't supposed to be kept anywhere, and I know that...
I realize that. Representing a very working class sort of people, Silverton has a lot of mill workers. You ever looked at a mill worker's thumb?
Yeah.
It's not going to match from one print to the next because there's not enough of it left intact to match his original print. So now when that guy goes in
now
to purchase that
details.
Firearm...
Well, it's okay to get into details. If I could comment, though, the thumbprint that they're looking at, and I find it very objectionable that if any time you're going to buy a gun, you may have to get your thumbprint taken, but apparently the feds are going to do that to us anyway. That print would only be checked in a computer system that checks that print against felon's thumbprints to figure out if you're a convicted felon. And it's not, it doesn't matter if you're...
Along the same line,
if
that felon
match,
has worked in a mill for a couple of years and chewed up his thumb...
Then we'll use his index finger.
Well...
I certainly appreciate your point about not wanting to know where your guns are at, because I would probably have a slightly different interpretation than my colleague from Salem about the reasons for our right to keep and bear arms provision in the Constitution. And I think it's more along the lines of what Representative Dwyer said, because the people that wrote that Constitution had been engaged in a revolution just shortly prior to it, and they didn't have a lot of trust for the government.
Well,
and that's a lot of the concerns that are before us today.
Okay.
I want you just to understand that we don't make light of those kinds of complications, and they will be addressed in this bill.
Okay. I realize it's very difficult for us to come here and testify on something that we really don't have any clue what it's going to look like when it's done.
Well, there'll be revised versions coming out as we work it over.
We'd be happy to hear, if you have any particular comments on some sections, I'd be happy to hear it, but earlier we had some witnesses that wanted to go through a three-hour section-by-section
dissertation. I'm not qualified to discuss each point because as you read each point, it's got subsections, it refers to other statutes.
Right.
I don't have that background. Sure. All I know is that I don't want to have to explain to my four-year-old who has already been introduced to firearms and realizes their potential why he has to go through all of this hassle to own one, something which to him and his family considers as natural as owning a shovel, which, by the way, is just as deadly. Thank you very much for your time.
I wanted to ask you a similar
question.
You manufacture knives?
Yes.
Are the knives you manufacture potentially lethal?
Yes. In fact, I make knives specifically for combat, which are carried right now in the Persian Gulf by U.S. Marines. I also manufacture knives that are carried by undercover police officers. I also make pocket knives that are used to clean the dirt from underneath your fingernails.
Do you think it'd be unwise if we screened the purchasers of your knives?
Yes. Because look in your kitchen drawer. In France, they outlawed stilettos after King Henry VIII was killed with a kitchen knife. The end result was stilettos became the number one weapon of choice of criminals in France. They got to the point where they were cutting the hands off of cutlers who were so poor that they bowed down to the criminals' money to make that knife. To this day, stilettos are illegal in France, and it has had absolutely no effect on their use in crime. We have a perfect opportunity here to create a way to identify the criminals and a way to identify the law-abiding citizens. But at the same time, you got to find a way to do it to where it doesn't, like other people have mentioned, stomped all over the law-abiding citizens' rights.
Thank
appreciate
you.
Your testimony. Is there Bill Montgomery in the room?
Chairman Calhoun and members of the subcommittee, I'm Bill Montgomery. I live at number 12 Portland Rowing Club, Portland, Oregon. I'd like to first observe you people really make your money. Congratulations. The spirit and intent and the safeguards of this proposed bill, if they remain intact, make it, in my opinion, a good piece of legislation. By shifting the responsibility of this emotional issue to the gun possessor and away from an inanimate object. The re-enfranchising of the responsible gun owner to carry concealed weapons, a privilege that has been largely taken away from him, is an important part of this bill. I have no trouble with a 15 or 45 day waiting period if it would help enforce some of the laws we have on the books or impliedly should be done now. I think it's a great idea. I don't see why it should take another 10 days, but if that's what it takes to do it, we need to clean the whole area up. I have several concerns, however. I got all
that House Bill 3470 treads a very thin line between social and political expediency and a serious infringement on our Second Amendment rights. Changing social outlooks, failure of our criminal justice system, and media hysteria have created a climate where this type of legislation could be made into law and would never have been considered a few years ago. It's a long and detailed, comprehensive bill, and we all know that we're going to have to work on it at some length. For a number of years, our national organizations have told us that people kill people and that guns don't. In the first time in my memory, this is the first time some members of our legislature have ever admitted to that. And I think this bill addresses that fact. We're addressing criminal activities, and I think for the first time admitting that we have to go after the individual and not after the gun, and I approve of that. As regards to the one-year study, I have reservations that this is de facto registration. I know that the serial numbers have been eliminated, but the people's names have not been. And in this day and age of electronic collection, I have some reservations that at the end of that 12-month period, we're going to be able to get rid of all that. I'm not real sure, and I don't have any answers, Representative Mannix, as to how to do that. I wish I did, but it is a concern. We're in support of the concealed weapons portion of the bill, and while we believe it leaves too much discretion to the sheriffs, we feel like the issuing or too much discretion to the issuing authorities, we feel that statewide uniformity, multi-weapon authority, and elimination of waiting periods for permit holders make it one of the strong selling points in the bill, and probably the reason that our chapters support the bill. That's, if we had to pick any one thing, that would be it. Because I represent a sportsman's organization, I would like the record to show that our ability to carry weapons concealed while hunting, fishing, and target shooting, and while en route to and from those activities will not be affected by this legislation and will be retained in current law. As I stated at the beginning of this testimony, this is a very delicately balanced bill. The organizations which I represent support the bill in its present form. However, any further restrictive amendments would cause us to back away from that stand. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Harder. Mr. Lehrer.
Lehrer.
That's
fine. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Fred Lehrer. I reside in Southwest Portland, Multnomah County. I appreciate the opportunity extended me today to testify in support of House Bill 3470. This is the first time I've ever testified before a legislative panel. I'm doing so today because I believe the legislation is important to me, to many other gun owners and gun enthusiasts. Let me begin by saying that I own several firearms, including handguns and a semi-automatic rifle. As a firearm owner, I've been concerned about the recent hysterical calls for legislation which would ban many semi-automatic rifles and which would restrict ammunition clip capacity. I don't believe restrictive gun legislation would serve to reduce gun-related crimes. However, I also believe that if gun enthusiasts, including organizations like the NRA, don't take the lead in proposing and initiating intelligent firearm legislation designated to restrict felons and incompetents from acquiring firearms, it is likely that some future legislature may enact legislation which would ban many classes of firearms that are currently owned and legally used today. I believe House Bill 3470 is an example of responsible and balanced legislation. I commend Speaker Vera Katz, the NRA, the Oregon State Rifle and Pistol Association, and other involved organizations for their willingness to work together to craft this bill. Through the means of electronic fingerprint verification, House Bill 3470 would enable law enforcement agencies to identify, at the point of sale, felons attempting to illegally purchase firearms. This bill also protects the rights of privacy and does not infringe on the rights of law-abiding citizens to own, possess, and legally use firearms. Mr. Chairman, there are three points I wanted to mention. I realize there's other people that want to testify, so I'm going to restrict it to the first point. As I stated, I live in Multnomah County. The bill appropriately establishes a uniform statewide concealed weapons permit law. Such a law has been in existence in the state of Washington for many years, and to my knowledge, this law has not created problems for Washington law enforcement agencies. As a resident, non-felon, law-abiding citizen, and taxpayer, I resent the current restrictive policy of the Multnomah County Sheriff regarding the issuance of concealed weapons permits. The ability for law-abiding citizens to defend themselves should not be determined by the policy of any law enforcement agency, but rather should be based on the demonstrated competence of the individual applicant to properly use firearms, that applicant's understanding of the laws regarding the use of deadly force, the applicant's past mental and criminal history, and by the inherent right all law-abiding citizens should have to protect and defend themselves. Mr. Chairman, although the police strive to protect citizens, the truth is they cannot always provide complete protection. The individual citizen must assume some of the responsibility for self-defense and take appropriate precautions. Sometimes those precautions may include carrying a concealed weapon or handgun. This option should not be restricted. I'm going to conclude at this point. If there's any questions the committee would like to ask me, I'd be happy to answer them.
Questions? I have one there. It's going to be an election for a new sheriff in Multnomah County, correct?
Yes.
Do you want to ask the candidates for that job what their position is on concealed weapons permits?
I'd like to know.
We're working on it.
Well, it might be wise in some forum to inquire. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Question. Representative Maddox, do you have a question?
Oh, no. That was a good comment or question.
Do you have an amendment to talk to?
Keeping my mouth shut.
Okay. Let's see here. We have Stephen Tandy, who apparently isn't necessarily for. Stephen, are you for or against this?
Well, I have some insight that you may appreciate.
Okay. Well, we'll bring up Gareth Ward also.
He touched
that already. Yes. Let's see if we have a Mike Percival.
Percival.
And we have a Clarence Connicky. Please state your name and go ahead with your testimony.
My name is Stephen George Tandy, and I have to admit that this legislation is directed to me, and I'm guilty. I have sold in this town over 40,000 long guns, rifles, and handguns. 40,000, me, or I've been directly responsible for them. Now, that isn't 10% of the guns that are sold in this town in the last 25 years. So if we could listen to what I'm saying while I'm talking, I'll wait. Please stop my time. I would appreciate Mr. Mannix hearing me.
Yeah. Oh, okay. He's one of my constituents, too.
You better listen than...
Council here, if you'll just copy those.
No, that's yours.
Oh, thank you.
I'll restate. I've sold over 40,000 guns in Salem, Oregon. That isn't 10% of the guns that have been sold in the last 25 years, by any means. In the bars, in the hallways, in the wherever you go. That's where they're sold. You know how many guns I've sold that have committed felonies? Zero, to my knowledge. Not one of those 40,000 guns have been used in a felony. I have had over 100 guns stolen from me in burglary attempts, or in successful burglaries, excuse me. You know how many of those have been used in felonies? Five have been recovered, all five, from felons and committed felonies in the act. You are using this whole thing. I'm sorry, you aren't. This is directed, and the focus is on the citizen, as we've been talking. The 40,000 guns I've sold aren't the problem, ladies and gentlemen. It's the other ones out there that are stolen, black marketed, and money will buy anything. Any one of you can go to any bar in this town, take $200 and buy a gun in 10 minutes. And you won't know, they won't know, whether you're legal citizens or not. Mr. Mannix, to answer your question about how to control it, I assume you own a car. Did they give you a background check whether you were a felon? Is that preventing you from driving down 12th Street at 100 miles an hour?
Well,
what is?
We're talking about taking cars away from drunk drivers, but that's another
That's
story.
True. And you know what? There's stricter legislation there than there is in the use of a lot of these felonies they've committed. October this year, four felons burgled, stole a car, ran it through my doors, took 25 guns. They were caught in the Lancaster, three of them were caught in the Lancaster Mall with stolen concealed weapons. They have committed at least 12 felonies that I know of since they were apprehended. Punishment? One got 3 years suspended, totally suspended. One got 5 years suspended. They admitted trading for drugs. They stole three cars. They robbed me, and they robbed Focus Electronics and several other felonies.
I need to interrupt. I said I wouldn't ask a lot of questions. I think you should be aware that this committee is probably the committee which is most sensitive to the need for more prison space, prison guards, tough sentences. We've passed just about every anti-crime bill you can imagine out of this committee. We're hoping that we can force them through the rest of the legislature, but so far we've done that. So we buy that message, and I don't think you need to worry about that part. The question is the folks in the metropolitan areas to the north, the trade-off we're talking about, the concealed weapon permit, lack of access.
We're going to need a triple tactics to pay for all the stuff you passed, but we don't think that's a problem.
Well, some of us are willing to pay for it. Well, anyway, I just wanted to try to shorten this up a little. We're sensitive to that element of the problem.
I just wish that everyone in this room, that were in the room that left, would all work on that problem rather than the direction that we get so dissipated to. And if we all could do that instead of working on how to identify a felon, good luck. I don't know how you're going to do that. But I will put a tattoo on me that says I'm not, if that's what it takes. But I don't want federal legislation telling me that I can or cannot do anything. Any other questions?
I would, about the numbers that you had, what type of information do you have to verify that the guns that you sold haven't been used in the commission of crimes?
You could ask Brian Riley. He's the chief of police here. I would like also in this study, if one of you or whoever's appropriate, to ask Mr. Riley, who is a friend of mine, by the way. There already is and has been at least a one-day waiting period for as long as I've been in the business. Now it's 5 day. How many? We turn in a little slip. They run it through the thing. The 5 day or 15 day. Ask Mr. Riley how many of those he's received while he's been sheriff. I can't guess. Thousands. Thousands. Ask him how many he's rejected. I know of none. Therefore,
only the honest people come in and fill out.
That's true. And I get a little resentful when people say here, well, we have to stop these people from going into the gun store and buying the guns. Folks, that's not where they're buying them. And that's why the legislation has to be vented towards where they are and what they're doing with them, not the guy that's following the laws already.
How about revoking tavern keepers' licenses if they let anybody sell guns on the premises?
Yeah, know about it first.
They won't know about it. I'm just a loose comment. It's a loose gun here. That's enough. Thank you.
I was going to have a little... you figured out that part of it. Your point is that law-abiding, a criminal's not going to walk in the door, plop down money, file paperwork, and buy a gun.
That's true. It hasn't happened to me in 40,000 guns. The guy in Sandy, I mean, sorry for him, but I guess he did it. But he didn't, did he? Did he do anything wrong?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, boy, he sure caught hell for it. Yeah.
Well, he'd been charged with felonies, I think, on 9 occasions, but he wasn't convicted of anything.
No, they were plea bargained to misdemeanors, even federal offenses.
Okay, let's go to the next gentleman here. Any other questions of the committee? Gentleman to the left, okay. Please state your name and...
Right. My name is Mike Percival. I'm a resident of Salem, Oregon, Marion County, and I'm representing myself as just a collector. I've been going to gun shows for approximately 20 years now, and when this recent rash of gun legislation, mania, whatever you want to call it, came out, my initial reaction was when I seen the NRA backed it, I thought, hey, this must be pretty good for a change. But then the average person at the gun show, and the last gun show I went to was last weekend, was a 1,000-table show with probably 15,000-plus people attending in Portland. That's a lot of people. They don't really know. All they know is they've seen that the NRA guy has accepted something, and that for the most part they think it's good. As this comes out, probably things are going to change. But the reason I came here to speak was I got to thinking what could be done positively. And the main thing I came up with, and I talked to quite a few people at these gun shows about it, and I've gotten quite a bit of acceptance out of it, was possibly going to, say, the motor vehicles division. When you get a driver's license or you want to buy a gun, you go through the background check. if they approve you mentally, if they approve you in, you know, your crime background, then you get a new driver's license. This is already a form of ID. If you come to a gun show and you want to purchase a gun, because like Steve Tandy there, hell, probably most of the guns in Oregon are sold away from gun, you know, shops. I, as a person who has a gun table, could say, you know, have you got this identification? If you do, it reasonably assures me that you've gone through a background check. And therefore, I can sell you the gun, you know. I can't tell by looking at people. Some people come in very grubby, and they might be very clean, nice people. But somebody could come in dressed like this, and he could be a bank robber. But at least I would have some assurance that he has gone through a background check. And instead of trying to get all this extra law, paperwork, everything involved, this would be a way of getting the guns cleared away from a gun shop situation. And most of the people I've talked to at the gun shows, they don't want to sell guns to bad guys. They really don't. You know, but they have no way of knowing at the gun show. And if there could be some sort of a notification program like this, it could be done away from a structured environment. And I wouldn't mind doing it. The only kick I've heard about it, and you're going to run into this, this is out west, this is Oregon. These people don't want to report this stuff. But they would be, they don't mind getting reassured that the people are okay that they're selling guns to. But they don't want to report it. If a guy comes up and you have the identification, he is approved. At the end of the driver's license period, it would go through another background check. He would get a new one. If he's committed a felony, then the driver's license is pulled and he doesn't have that identification. And the people I've talked to, for the most part, go along with this. And it might be something to consider.
Appreciate your testimony. Any questions of the committee of this gentleman? I appreciate your testimony too, sir. What do you have for us?
My name is Clarence Kennecke. I live at 21335 Northwest St. Helens Road. That's where wild or in the Wildwood area where Metro was just trying to site a dump. So I'm a little, after an 8-year fight with Metro, I'm a little bit skeptical when you talk to me about government. I really want to thank you for being able to be here and give you my views on this. I'm not definitely against this legislation. I see some, the basic idea of it is okay, but there's some things in it that I object to pretty bad. One of the things that I can see is going to give a problem, or has a potential to give a problem, is that these background checks, even though they're not allowed to be made into a list by the state police and local government, the other forms of government, and there are a lot of them around, are not prohibited of it, of making a list of them. And I see evidence all through this by requiring the serial numbers of these firearms and a complete description of the firearms that somebody intends to register them and make a list. Otherwise, they wouldn't want all this information. Again, I'm a skeptic, but I've learned to be that due to government's own actions. The other thing is that when we give something up to the government, we should only give up, and we're giving up on this, let's face it, we should only give up what is specifically given up. We should not give, if we have the state police give a check on this, that's all they should do. And anyone, there needs to be machinery in here, that anyone in a public service that disregards this, goes off on their own, that we'd be able to prosecute those personally for damages. Another thing that is not addressed that I think should be in here, is it still doesn't seem, burglary doesn't seem to be a crime in Oregon. It's still not a real bad thing to steal a firearm. I think it should be a real bad thing to steal a firearm, next thing to armed robbery, because as soon as a burglar has a rifle, you always assume that that rifle is loaded, or a pistol or anything else that he steals from somebody. Somebody could get hurt that way. So I think that needs to be made part of this, and I can't see why anybody would object to it other than the thieves. Then the other thing that I have about this is I see marijuana is mentioned in here that I think that's a disgrace to the people of Oregon to have something like that in a bill like this to exempt people.
It's coming out.
It's coming out.
I guess that was maybe, was that just put in there so we could throw something out and make everybody happy?
It's old law. Current law. Well, it's current law. It's soon to be old.
Well, it hasn't passed the Senate yet.
Okay, is there any questions I might answer for you?
Any questions anyone in the committee of any of these witnesses? Appreciate you coming and taking the time to testify. I think you all made your points very well today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Could I add one more thing?
Certainly.
It seems to me like what we're trying to do here is keep the guns out of the bad people's possession. And this is only going to touch a little bit of the gun market. It's going to touch him.
We were listening to what you had to say about motor vehicle permits.
I would be glad at a gun show to see somebody's ID. You know, just because they have a driver's license doesn't mean they have a clean bill of health. And I cannot tell by looking at them. It's just like the people were saying earlier. You can't put a tattoo on their head or anything. And this would give some assurance that it's going to keep them out of their
hands. That could be a voluntary compliance thing. The people would just basically say, well, hell, if we show up at a gun show and you don't have a card that shows that you're okay, we're not going to sell you a firearm.
Right. You can make it
or
a law.
You don't have that endorsement on your motor vehicle license,
yeah,
or something.
Yeah, and the people that want firearms can go out and get this background check. Then every time they want to buy a gun, they don't have to go through a tremendous amount. If they become a convicted felon, the license is pulled, they get... Of course, they'll be back on the street, or if it's pending on, say, a certain type of felony, maybe that could be pulled. Since it is a photo ID, I couldn't give my ID to Steve Tandy, and he couldn't go in the thing and buy it.
We'll be thinking about that.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Brian has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I realize the potential efficiency of tying it into the driver's license. Mm-hmm. Setting that aside for a minute, how about also the possibility of being able to get a the pre-qualification card by going into a licensed dealer's store in advance of perhaps wanting a gun and also not needing to get a concealed weapons permit. Just go in, apply to be pre-qualified, you know, and then you get your card. Then it does thereafter act like the driver's license idea.
They have that up in Canada. It's called a permit to purchase, and you go to the RCMP, you pick up the permit, but it's good for one gun. But see, that fits within the structure. There's probably within a 100-mile radius of here every month, there's two or three gun shows.
No, but does that option also worth considering, do you think, the way
you bet. I think it would be, because honest to God, the majority of the people that go to these gun shows and trade firearms don't want to give them to felons. Yeah. They're law-abiding people. Sure. They've got a considerable investment. I have 70 guns at home. I also collect old cars. But I have 70 guns at home. That's a considerable investment on my part. I don't want to jeopardize it by selling it to somebody that's going to misuse it.
Mm-hmm. As in serving on the Transportation Committee, as I think about DMV and so forth, I don't know if I want to channel a lot more activity through that.
Well, this is just one idea, but basically, up at the Portland show, I probably talked to over 50 people about it, and I ran into very little opposition. What they don't want to do, this is a hobby with them, they don't want to get a lot of paperwork going. But at the same time, they agree that, you know, we'd all like to see the guns kept out of the hands of the people that are going to misuse them. Same thing would be true with cars. But you can't do it. There's going to be a flaw in my idea, my system. There'll be something wrong with it. But there's so much going on that this might at least give us a chance to say, here's somebody with a fairly clean bill of health.
The key concept is the pre-qualification.
Right. So I would go in one time and then have it out of my hair for a couple of years.
Okay, thank you.
What if we tied it in with membership in the unorganized militia? You're over the age of 18 and you're a citizen of the state. Just check to make sure you don't have a mental record and you don't have a felony record, and you have membership then in the unorganized militia, which is, by the way, it's in the statutes. We do have an unorganized militia. Uh-huh. Every it says male right now. We're changing that to any person who's a citizen over 18 to the age of 60 is the way it's going to read, is a member. What if we didn't put an age limit at the top end of that, but just said any member can just procure this card demonstrating that they're a law-abiding citizen of the state, and then they don't have any restrictions?
Well, you know, here's the thing right now. You're talking about doing something before it was assault weapons. Sure, you can kill a lot of people with them. But he killed, what, five people down there? That could have been done with a cap-and-ball revolver invented back in the 1840s, and he would have had a round left over. He could have killed a lot more people with a car. This is going to happen again. If you outlawed semi-automatics, all of a sudden you can have people showing up with 94 Winchesters. They call them that because they were invented in 1894.
Well,
he could have did the same thing with that.
We need to realize, or I hope folks will realize, most of us are not here discussing this issue seriously because of one incident.
Mm-hmm.
That may have sparked interest among some people, but we just need to try to deal with the whole issue as a package, rationally, unemotionally, and try to look at the whole system of gun laws in the state, see if we can come up with something.
Well, what the ID card would do is put the burden on the person. It would say, yes, I am approved. I have went through a background check. If I sold him a gun, that would be the same thing as Steve Tandy does as a firearms dealer. Except it might find more acceptance away from what you want to do is keep it out of the people's hands, whether it's a firearms dealer, or somebody at a gun show, or somebody in the back of a bar. If you made it, you know, if we were both sitting in a bar and you wanted to buy a gun from me and I said, I want to see your firearms ID card, you could produce it. It would at least say to me that you had a clean background.
Okay, thank you.
Something to think about.
If that were put in effect, what happens to the person that doesn't have that ID card that has a possession of firearm? That's the part that has to be considered.
And do you want to run it through? Do you really trust DMV enough to run that through DMV?
I don't know.
I'm going to grab a question. Why don't you call the next tree that's circled there?
I might have a clock.
Hey, John Sweeney.
Okay,
Mr. Sweeney. Leon Riggs and let's see, Brian Judy's already testified. So if Leon Riggs would come up also while we're at it, we're not over. members sometimes have other obligations they've got to step out to. Don't let that bother you. It happens all the time.
We're still being videotaped.
Okay. Okay. Is Ed Murphy present?
Yes.
If you could come forward as well. We basically have John Sweeney, Ed Murphy, Leon Riggs, and George Pace.
Yeah, Jeff Osterman.
And the little Jeff Osterman.
He stood on another shield.
Okay, and we haven't forgotten about Jeff Osterman yet. Okay. You can join the table here. We've got to restart the clock. Mr. Sweeney.
I'm John Sweeney. I'm the president of the Oregon State Rifle and Pistol Association. And as the president, I've been hearing about all of the work that was going into this thing. And not to drag this out, because I'm rather short spoken anyway. And we'd certainly like to see this passed out to the House with a due pass recommendation. And I'm certainly glad I don't have your job either. And thank you.
Quick question. Now, granted, this is a balanced package dealing with current concepts. Are you open to perhaps at least studying some of these alternative ideas over the next couple of years to see if we could do something more proactive rather than reactive in terms of gun ownership?
Yes. Basically, if we could help the law-abiding citizens, everything possible, and if we can stomp the criminal, everything possible.
You're going to help us with that prison construction, right?
You betcha.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Sweeney. Ed Murphy?
Oh. Yeah, go ahead. For the record, my name is Ed Murphy. I live in Marion County and resident of Kaiser, the city of Kaiser. I wish to commend the people assembled here on this side of the room, what's left of them, for exercising their right to participate in the process of government. And I also want to commend the sponsors and the legislators for, on this particular piece of legislation, not bending to the hysteria that was evidenced in California when a Mr. Vandekamp held up an assault rifle and indicated to the crowd that was assembled there that he could have killed everyone in the building. I am a private citizen. I don't represent anybody else but myself. However, I am a member of two of the organizations that were represented here, both on the national level and the local. As a citizen and as a concerned citizen, I felt that this legislation, when I originally arrived here, I was completely against it. Subsequent to that, I talked with Mr. Judy of the NRA, other members, other people I know locally throughout the state of Oregon,